Welcome to Market Proof Marketing, the podcast from the industry leaders at Do You Convert, where we talk about the current and future state of marketing and online sales for builders and developers across the globe. We're not here to sell you, we're here to help you and to try and elevate the conversation. Is there a topic you'd like us to cover or a question you'd like us to answer? We'll do it. Simply send an email to show@doyouconvert.com. Oh boy, we got a fun one today, as Andrew Peak would say. Paul Cardis, he is the founder of Avid Ratings. He is also the founder and CEO of On3. Paul, thanks so much for coming on. Again, I think you were in year one, one of our very first guests.
Wow. Yes, thank you, Kevin. It's awesome to be here. I don't know if it was year one, but I was very grateful for that opportunity. And I'm, again, very grateful today to be on your show.
Paul was and is kind of, he was our go-to of any time at PCBC, the Builder Show, our own summit event. We need someone to talk about customer experience, which is, you know, what all the cool people call CX. Paul's the man. So I would say, Paul, you are the OG, the original, the best in terms of articulating what this really means and starting an industry-wide conversation on its importance. And for those who might not know about that history, I just thought it'd be fun for you to kind of kick us off here today before we talk about On3 and surveys and all the other fun stuff. What does CX mean to the guy who knows more about it than arguably anyone else in the industry?
Well, that's a big statement. Thank you. It means a lot coming from you, and so I really appreciate it. But in the end of the day, I remember, is to kind of spin the clock back, you know, this will be 1990. I remember sitting around with my father, who was also in the construction industry, he had switched at this point to doing a lot of renovation. He was in his best abatement at that time of his life, but he had been a builder. He did commercial, he did residential, he did a whole bunch of stuff. But anyway, but he built a very successful asbestos abatement company. That's what he retired and ended up kind of being his big hit. But I remember we sitting around kind of talking about customers' feedback and what the industry does with it and how it was pretty much non-existent, right? We operated with, you know, it's a handshake, the job was done, and everybody moved on, and nobody really cared what the customer thought back then. So there was very few companies really doing much with it. And this was before Google. This was before Yelp. This was before all those review sites came out now and, you know, are absolutely commonplace for us today. So it's been a long run to watch CX go from something that people kind of tilted their head about to actually even becoming CX, because back then it was customer satisfaction. It was customer feedback. You know, there wasn't really a concept of customer experience. So we watched that evolve here over the years. So what is CX today? What is the customer experience? Well, I've been given that a lot of thought. It's really more than one thing. Everybody thinks of it as a single dimension, but it's a multidimensional phenomenon of psychology. It's the psychology of happiness, right? What makes us happy that we're going to be able to click on a like or click on a heart, or put out a review that really, you know, endorses a company. And frankly, it's all changed, right? We used to live on referrals, right? That's what everybody talked about back then. Today, referrals don't really matter much. It's not like we don't want them. They just don't happen very often, right? How many people know somebody is going to go buy a house with a builder in your community? That number is very, very low, right? but you put a review out on Google, you could be affecting, you know, hundreds to thousands of eyeballs, and that could affect 10, 20, 50, 150 sales, you know, that year, that month. So they absolutely matter. And getting someone to be able to do that is a multidimensional event that happens in the mind, and it happens at the subliminal level. So, but I'd love to share more if you want to know on the theory and our total CX
model.
We want to go
as deep into this as we can here. For those of you who are listening, just this is your reminder that we are also a visual, a show that records video. We put it on YouTube. It goes in all access. So check out what he's about to share. We'll include a link in the show notes to Paul, of course, and all that he's going on. But this is awesome. Okay, so I'm just going to give a quick context for those who are listening who are going to try to follow along. We got a circle with four quadrants and a circle that is in the center, kind of the bullseye that connects all four quadrants. So the quadrants are from top left, quality, caring, authenticity, and ease, with total CX kind of being in the center. So that's kind of your definition of it in its entirety, is all of these things together: quality, caring, authenticity, and ease. And you've got in parentheses kind of another way of saying it as property, people, culture, and process.
Right.
All right. So give us the quick overview here of how these break down. I have a feeling that each one of these could be its own 2-hour lecture, but we'll
well,
try
actually
to.
It can. Yeah. There's 64 dimensions that break this down even further. We are not going to cover those here today, but we are at the top. We're at the tip of the iceberg on this one. And yeah, but it's a big concept, right? It's saying that if you're going to make your customer happy to the point where they're going to go out there and give you a thumbs up or give you a great review, you have to cover off on some interesting things. First is the quality of the product. In this case, it's property, but it's the product, right? We're building a home. That home has to be of a certain level of quality. And there's a number of dimensions of quality that we explore, right? Was it clean? Mm-hmm. Does it function well, right? Is it innovative? Does it, you know, all these things. Is it beautiful? All those things that make up what quality means today for a buyer. And, but you have to do
to
well
say,
there.
Paul, that there, sorry to interrupt. Is it safe to say that there are objective and subjective things that make up what quality Absolutely. Is to the consumer?
Well, you have to think subjective because we're dealing with people's minds. So people aren't going to see it the same way, right? Do I?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. You know, it's just the way it is, two opinions. And so, you know, I had a wise superintendent who kind of taught me that lesson. He said, well, you show me a house that's done and I'll undo it for you. And he did. So, you know, awesome. you could think the house is done and he'd come through and he'd find another 10 or 15 more items, right? It's like looking mm-hmm. at the Grand Canyon, right? You see a different element every time you go there. So, right. Yeah, there's 60,000 points of failure in a single home. So what is quality is a very interesting and difficult question. But there is certainly, you know, not to get totally, you know, on left field on it. I mean, we all know quality means it's got to be a clean house. It's got to be a done house for the most part. Is it a perfect house? No, because perfect doesn't exist. But it's got to be really well done. All right. And it's a lot of work to go from basically dirt to a total, you know, messy disaster with drywall dust to a nice, clean, finished house. It really is. I'm always amazed that I see how much work that our trade contractors go through to bring a house around to that level.
I promise not to keep derailing us, Paul, but so much of the talk is about the innovation that's going to go around how homes are put together And even when the robots are doing it on site or off site, we're still going to have to be talking about quality back to, because until the customer is a robot, I think people think the panacea is going to come here when everything is just, you know, perfectly square level, et cetera. Our customers are still humans.
Right.
Until AI is the customer, we're still stuck with having to talk about that topic, I think.
Right. And beauty will be in the eye of the beholder. And therefore, you will need humans to also be the final check of quality, too.
That's a great point.
Right. You know, what is pretty and, you know, what is attractive looking and what is done? Yeah, you know, that's going to be a thing that we'll constantly be battling against. But quality has to be at a certain level. But if you build a great house and you did nothing else, and we've all know those kind of builders, right? We've had them, right? That's what the old school builder. Yeah, I do a great job. I'm terrible in mm-hmm. service, but you know what? I build you a good house. You got to be grateful for that. Well, guess what? That's not enough today. You can't just build a great house and walk away, drop the mic. And then, you know, that's not how it's not going to work. Customers want more. It's like going to a restaurant. Have you ever been to a restaurant, you know, Kevin, where you got great food, but the service was crap, or they were aloof. Maybe they weren't horrible in service, but they just weren't engaged with you. You know, maybe some fancy.
Yeah,
you know, it's
just
not
this
great.
Last week, you must have been spying on me. And it was the food was so good. The whole family even agreed. We got six of us. It's hard for mm-hmm. everyone to agree that the food was incredible.
Yeah.
But the service was terrible. The time that it took was unacceptable. It was, and so we're at the end. We were like, do we want to come back here? And the default is no. Right. That I think that's also an important point just to bring up, is that the default is let's not do something that's even remotely difficult. This goes to your fourth step. I'm moving ahead. Sorry. All right.
Yeah, but you're
Keep
right
going.
there. Exactly. That's the point, right? So quality, you can't just do that, right? And there are maybe some builders today that just think, well, we just built a great house, and we're going to be okay. It helps. It's a big deal. It's a huge challenge, and you have to do it, but you still are going to have to do more. And so we move to the next quadrant, which is caring. You have to have people that care, just like at a restaurant. I keep going back to that, but it could be a hotel. It could be your Uber ride, could be whatever. If you have the person there, and maybe robot someday, Kevin, but anyway, if it's caring or expresses caring, or he or she expresses caring, you know, that's a huge component, right? And so you could go to a restaurant and maybe the food wasn't perfect. Maybe they undercooked your steak and they had to send it back. But if that waiter or waitress was fun and engaging and caring and you know, made the overall experience great, you know what? You'd tolerate that. You know, it's like, okay, kitchen
screwed. I was at Waffle House this morning with my oldest son. And let me tell you, there's a lot of things about that experience that aren't great, but the server was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Made a difference, right? She turned pretty plain Jane eggs and pancakes into something that you'd come back to, right?
That's why my kids want to go there, honestly. It's because of the human interaction.
There you go. And that's a great example of the model in that you don't always have to be perfect in all of these quadrants. And that's that we're going to get to that punchline in a second, but you're starting to get into it. And then the next one, and so yeah, you can build a great product and you can have great people, but there's another problem. What happens if we're inauthentic? And authenticity is discovered in the face of challenges and adversity. So for example, we screwed up, let's say like the steak, you know, I screwed up. How we handle problems and mistakes is going to define whether people trust us, whether they think we're being genuine with them. And that really, really matters. You know, like for example, you know, if a builder has the wrong product, I remember when I built a house with a builder, not to be named, great builder though, they did a great job, but they weren't perfect. And they put the wrong fascia stone on our fireplace. And I remember we came in, actually, it was not there. We were supposed to get the stone on the fireplace. So we paid for it and it was not there. And they were very apologetic and they got it right. They made it right. But, you know, it could have gone the other way too, where they would have been like, well, I'm sorry, you know, it's too late now. You know, we didn't happen. You should have made sure it was on your list and blah, 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 whatever. And so how we handle problems is a huge issue. And the reality is that comes down to culture. You know, are we honest with our customers? Do we take ownership when we screw up? And do we encourage that genuineness and authenticity? And that's enormous in the world of CX today. And so how we score there will also impact the overall experience. And then lastly, ease. This is going to be more to the process. And so how easy is it to buy a home today? How easy was it to go to Starbucks, you know, at the International Builders Show when the lines were 150 people deep, right? It was not very easy. They actually turned off their app. They said, we're not running our app anymore. I mean, people had gone on the app and ordered their coffees and they couldn't even do that, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and it wasn't very easy. It wasn't a very good experience at all. But the key thing here is you don't have to be perfect in all of these quadrants, right? Let's run with the Starbucks example. That's the one that I've been picking on quite lately, but I do this with every company I'm with, whether I'm, you know, going to a hotel or restaurant or buying a car. We recently bought a used car for my daughter and evaluating them the same way. And, you know, how was the quality of the car? How were the people? Were they authentic when things didn't go right? And how easy was the process? And the key here is not that we're perfect across the board, but it's that the total score is high enough. And that means you could be low in one area. So let's go back to Starbucks, right? Quality of coffee at Starbucks. I think everybody I talk to, they make a darn good cup of coffee. Always seems to be a really nice cup of coffee. It's not a junky cup for the most part, right? The people caring. Well, I think they were more caring years ago than they are today, but I think right. They're still there. I think they still write your name on the cup. I occasionally, you know, I don't see it, but for the most part they do. And authenticity. Well, they've had their problems, right? They've, you know, they treated those African-Americans and I think it was Pittsburgh and threw them out and they had all these problems. And, you know, how they handled it was said, you know, we screwed up. We don't have enough training. We're going to shut down. We're going to retrain our people. And we are very, very sorry. And so they've had some pretty big black eyes that they've walked away from unscathed because they were authentic about how they handled it. And in the end, there is a problem with ease. That's actually their lowest quadrant. It is difficult because everybody loves a Starbucks. Everybody wants a Starbucks.
I saw their CMO talk at a Zillow event, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they said like their biggest problem is our lines. And I actually, you know, you're Delta Airlines, right? Also, they have a fantastic hub where you live. And Delta has the same problem as Starbucks. Both these companies have actually been so successful in those first three quadrants that I guess where I'm leading this to is it never ends. It doesn't sound like, because Delta and Starbucks have done quality, caring, and authenticity well enough that the supply is outstripped by demand.
You nailed it. Exactly. They can counter for their weak spot, their lack of an easy process, because they're great in the other three. And their total CX number is still high enough because of those other areas are carrying the day. Now, Starbucks has done some things to fix it with their app. So they've actually improved their e-score, which is actually, you know, overall improving their total CX even more. So they're solving some of these problems. Delta, same kind of thing. They're working through their challenges as well. But that's the model of total CX. And when we apply this to home building.
For the owners listening, Paul, the most fun part about how Delta is trying to solve their problems is they just keep raising their prices until people stop buying tickets. Imagine if you were a home builder who could just keep raising your prices regardless of everything else, just because people really wanted your product.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, they are expensive. Yeah. I have not been flying them lately, and I used to be a Delta Platinum.
I'm the same way.
But unfortunately, we don't just buy the most expensive plane ticket when we're going places. We do look at price. So, you know, we've been flying American and United lately, but hey, maybe that, you know, that's obviously by design. They're overloaded.
But that's a lever that Delta now controls. They could get you and I back as a customer anytime they wanted to by reducing their price.
That's right. It reminds me of a home builder in Phoenix, Blandford Homes. And I remember they were so good at what they do. They still are today. They just basically kick the customer experience through the roof, and they raise their prices on their homes. They're actually the most expensive home in that size category in the area. And they get lineups. They had lineups during the 07, 08, 09 recession. And in fact,
all about that. Yeah.
You remember that, right?
Same thing at our end too, but it was, it doesn't have to just be during pandemic eras, where people weren't physically lined up, but they were, you know, digitally lined up, but still, you can manufacture this. You can turn your screen sharing off so they can see our faces as large as possible for the rest of the podcast. But I think that's a fascinating overview. I have seen the more complex version of this before, which will even further blow your mind. He's given us just kind of the top layer of his insight. But I kind of want to leave the audience wanting more so they can connect with you and follow all of your insights and more to come, I think, in terms of all that. In fact, I know there's more to come, but we just don't want to talk about it. All right. So Paul knows his stuff. Okay. That was the whole point of that last part. He knows his stuff. Tell us a little bit about, and you founded Avid Ratings, of course, as well. Talk to us about what On3 is doing, has been doing, and kind of the new things that you're beginning to offer from what you learned from On3 and your prior experience with Avid.
Well, I'm a 50-year-old startup again, so which has been interesting. I'm getting too old for this stuff, Kevin. But
yes,
anyway, but it's been a great run. We launched On3 because we saw that the quality quadrant wasn't really being solved. Like, we're still basically building houses the same way we did 150 years ago, and they're training the people the same way we did 150 years ago. And it just was like such a glaring hole that we just had to fill it. Got together with some great other leaders in this industry, we put our time and treasure together, and we launched On3. You know, we're 100% internally funded. We now are training over 100,000 new homes a year now under our platform that are being built, working with a number of the top 10 builders in America, all the way down to small remodelers, even trade contractors. Now we have plumber, We have framing company, we have electrician, electrical companies that are using On3. So even the trades now are launching On3 to organize all their scopes of work into video-based scopes of work and be able to launch that in a mobile platform that works offline. That's one of the key things of On3. And so with that, we really are solving the, you know, this is how we want it done. And we're applying it in a way that's been really well received by the industry.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think, I mean, the idea of standardized processes historically have just been black and white text in a manual on the shelf somewhere. And what you really did was make that come alive and accessible from wherever people were and whatever they needed.
Yeah. And moreover, we're verifying that everybody is competent on the job site and in their particular categories. And that is through various check-ins that happen on that mobile device. So as an owner, you now know, because when the human brain does something horrible, it forgets, right? So we, you know, and there's a lot of details that we've been talking about in a home. And so, you know, having those details being and confirming that before we start working with this product, we know how to work with this product, or before we start on this phase of a project, we know everybody's ready for that and knows how to deal with it. That's huge. And this saves not six figures, it saves multiple seven figures for our clients, because the amount of waste and rework and failed inspections is extremely costly right now. And we're seeing those numbers go way down by implementing our program.
I love it. Before we go on to the next topic, On3 is awesome. It's taken off. Go check it out. A lot of the builders that we work with on the marketing or online sales end have used it for several years now and really enjoy it. That's awesome. Selfishly, I want to toss out an idea, because there's no one better to ask it to. I was trying to think about kind of how builders can improve the quality segment as well through the intangibles. And something that came to mind is, what if as a home builder, you said, if you choose flat paint, so we'll let you choose different colors throughout the home, but if you choose to select flat as the paint sheen that we use in your home, then any warranty work that needs to be done over our 1 or 2 year program, we will touch up, spackle, and repaint your walls for you. Mm-hmm. To me, that seems like a win-win, because we know if a customer has flat paint on the walls, they're less likely to see defects from the beginning. Mm-hmm. There's going to be less tension there, less blue tape. And then anyone who's been through that process before is like, I'm glad you fixed the thing that shouldn't have been wrong in the first place, builder. But now really you want me to, I have to repaint this myself or hire a different contractor or worry about repainting the whole wall. So I feel like it's a, I don't, what term do you call that? Well, first of all, do you agree? Does that sound like an interesting concept or not?
Well, it's being done. I can tell you that a number of builders are doing the paint touch up after move in, because you know they're going to ding up the walls. And so why not, you know, help them feel good about their home instead of leaving that glaring mark on the hallway, you know, for them to deal with. And then they do it wrong because they don't know the right paint to use and all of that. And it's an easy fix. So I do know some builders that are providing the paint touch-up kits for sure, and others that actually just come in and will do one run round of paint touch-up after move-in. So yeah. I don't know if that's exactly what you were thinking.
No, but I think it's just genius. Again, we make things so hard on ourselves as an industry sometimes.
Right.
It's like if you have semi-gloss or eggshell on the wall, and you have to repaint the whole wall once versus just having everything be flat. It's the customer's option. They can still have semi-gloss and pay for that if they want, or eggshell. But if they want to go flat, it's a win-win-win for everyone. And you get better warranty coverage down the road. Turnkey, don't have to lift a paintbrush. Anyway, sorry
it's
to distract you.
Where you want to make it easy, right?
That's,
you know? And it's not costly.
I think it's just such a good framework, Paul, that you've come up with. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and it expresses caring too. So it's kind of a hybrid, right? You're knocking a couple of stones with that one. And I like it.
Well, caring, we will stay on target, but you're right, because, and this is my articulation, but again, you tell me if I'm saying this wrong. The caring part also is that you're letting the customer select, which if you really care a lot about eggshell paint, you can have it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the trade-off. You decide is also, I guess that's ease in one sense. It's letting them define quality, But I also feel like part of caring is letting them have a prioritization impact, which our industry is trying to get away from as fast as possible. Like, you get every house this way, the exact way, the same time, every time.
Right.
Which means you got to think about your other quadrants different and compensate accordingly.
Well, now you made me think of another one, and that is, it's also being very authentic and saying, look, we know you like the eggshell, but here are the downsides. And by the way, here's the flat. There are some downsides with it, but this is how we remedy it. So you're being very clear, transparent, honest. And then so that authenticity and allowing them to make the best possible choice with all
right,
the
facts. Everyone, Paul and I are announcing our roadshow. We're going to be visiting all 50 metro areas, having this conversation. No, I'm just kidding. But this is going to
be fun.
We're going to have a lot of fun. All right. Yeah. Talk to us about the state of the industry when it comes to surveys and what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So while we launched On3, we're doing a lot of construction training right now. And we're helping to make sure that we can get quality, because in the end of the day, 80% of the workforce on the job site is a trade contractor. You know, we are business managers as builders. We're not truly swinging the hammers and hanging the drywall. We're hiring others to do it. And of course, we're not directly hiring them. So, you know, we're hiring the owner of those companies, but they have the responsibility to put their people in our houses. So that's where we come in to make sure that there's real clarity in terms of expectations. And in some cases, even the how-to, through On3, we can make that happen. But one of the things we discovered was that in order to train people and retrain them, because that's not a one and done with us, it's not a get them trained, put a certificate on the wall and everybody's happy. That's actually not what gets it done. It's the constant training that we're doing. I mean, it's continual learning, really. And so in order to do that, we realized that the customer satisfaction results that many builders are using today have a lot of keys to the kingdom in terms of what we should be training on. So we decided that with much discussion, because I was not sure if I wanted to get back into the survey business, not for any other reason, just that, you know, I had done that for a long time. But we decided it really was synergistic for our business to launch a survey company that was connected to the training, the wealth of training data that we have.
That's the piece that immediately resonates with me, Paul, is you're connecting a piece that for who knows how many different reasons is not currently connected. You know, and I know that most surveys get looked at once if we're lucky by the people who should be looking at it, and then never again, except for as some comparison point in the past. And so there is not a flywheel effect occurring the way that it should be occurring.
Yes.
And your On3 tool is already set up to say, here's the issues, here's the training that would help those issues. We need to go retool or redeploy those particular modules and make sure that people view them and internalize them properly. But yeah, so I'm saying things for you in some cases. In some cases, everyone, this is Paul's perspective, right? So people ask us all the time at Do You Convert, what are the best survey options? We give the typical names because those are what we know about. But in terms of, you know, every industry and every quadrant of every industry struggles with innovation. And I would say, just generally speaking, and this is it could be my fault if you're listening from any of these companies, you can blame me. I'll take the blame. But I also just haven't read or seen a lot of people communicating about innovations that are occurring in the survey space. And so that kind of leaves the opportunity here for someone to say, we're going to try to innovate.
And we have. I've had 5 years to think about what would I have done differently in the survey business? What could we do differently if I were to relaunch again? And so we have really relaunched and I think reinvented what a customer survey should be today. Without getting into all those details, our program is extremely well received right now. Everybody's literally going, wow, this is such a better experience with better data. And the fact that it's not a radar detector that just tells me, hey, I just got a ticket and I don't know what to do about it. We actually, when the survey results are low, we can actually impact all the way down to the boots on the ground, the field level trades, so we can fix problems more quickly. It's very quick. So when survey results are bad, rather than just knocking people on the head, say, go fix it. Because that's what they do right now. Oh, yeah. We got a bad survey, go fix it.
That's what I was going to bring up is, I interact with a lot of owners or division presidents of organizations, and oftentimes people that work below them. And that's kind of what happens. It's like you kick someone and say, why'd you mess that up? Do better next time. And there's not necessarily that connection again of here's exactly what we mean by better. And the other thing that probably won't surprise you is a number of people who have said, because I'll ask on a leadership call, how are the surveys looking, or tell me about customer feedback. And then there's, I don't want to over-exaggerate, but certainly, let's say more than three, less than 10 off the top of my head who have said since the pandemic, they stopped surveying altogether.
Wow.
Because they essentially said, I don't know what to do with this. My team won't know what to do with this feedback, or the perception that they can't address it at all right now. So let's just shut off that entire feedback mechanism.
Well, it's an exercise in frustration for many of these companies, and I sympathize with them. I get it. I do. And that's exactly what I saw developing too.
You made an interesting comment before we hit record, something about like you kind of pontificated that CX was dead for a while. You want to just unpack that comment?
Yeah. I didn't do a lot of writing on that, but it wasn't just our industry, but COVID really blew a hole in the customer experience because we were all literally trying to survive, right? And survive physically in some cases, mentally, nearly all of us. And so the idea of worrying about, well, was this a perfect and great experience? Well, frankly, took second fiddle to all the other issues of just getting supplies that we needed to build homes and going to a restaurant and make sure they were even open, let alone was the service good. And, you know, and then all the masking and all the weirdness that happened if you even did try to do it. So it was just a weird time. And the customer experience went out the window for a number of years. I watched it and I think that happens in a period of crisis, but it's back and back with a vengeance. There's no question you need it. And home builders who are thinking they can just operate what we're going to have lineups no matter how our houses are built or no matter how we serve them is going to be mistaken here soon. Now as interest rates are rising, it's going to get harder. So
quick point of clarity. So the surveys are being done through On3, or is this a separate organization? To talk to for the people listening so they can make sure they understand.
We launched a division of On3 called BuildCare. So you'll be seeing the BuildCare brand out there. And BuildCare is a survey company, and you can use BuildCare without On3. You can use BuildCare with On3. It's totally optional, but BuildCare is a standalone company division of our company that will basically provide you with full service customer satisfaction surveys. We're doing them faster, better, higher response rates. More importantly, customers are giving us feedback saying this process was great. We really like this survey much better than what they had been doing in the past. So, I'm really excited about being back in it and doing it differently this time. We're also tying to not just within the industry benchmarks. We are launching in 10 cities across the country, but that will continue to expand. But we're also comparing us to other industries. So that's also been fun, where now we can actually really see our home building company benchmarked against maybe Hilton and Tesla and Apple and some of these other companies that are out there. Wouldn't that be so cool? Yeah, because we don't operate in a vacuum. You know, they are going into these other places, and every one of them is focused on customer experience, just like we are. So it's important to know how we fit in the world.
Yeah. And it's important to understand that the answer isn't always a chatbot.
Yeah, that's right. Without a doubt.
AI is a helpful tool, but again, there's a whole quadrant that talks about humans, which I think is really important.
Yeah, the chatbot's not very caring. And hence why people really try to avoid them, right? They hate them. They'll do it as a last resort.
I can't wait for you to keep publishing more on this whole framework, because it's not that a tool, again, I sarcastically picked on chatbots, but there's a reason why companies keep choosing them. They're trying to solve a problem. But if you don't have that framework to think through very clearly, which part am I trying to solve? And is that really, and when I try to solve it with that tool, which other parts are impacted? then you're flying blind. You don't have instruments on a cloudy day, to use a piloting analogy, right? You just,
absolutely.
It's all in feeling. Paul, thanks so much. This has been incredible. Can't wait to hear more about how this is working for everybody, and wish you the best of luck. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch you.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, Kevin.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Market Proof Marketing. Can't wait for the next one, or looking to connect with other new home marketers? Become a member of our private community, DYC All Access, which is 100% free and always will be. Get exclusive content not shared anywhere else, access to private events, and the ability to join a marketing impact group with other marketers like you around the country. Visit our link in the show notes or members.doyouconvert.com to join. All opinions expressed by me, Andrew Peek, Jackie Lipinski, and our castmates are solely our own opinions. Now get to work and make sure your company is market-proof.